My guest is on the old Dog and Bone this morning on the phone, and I am talking to Andrew Drury, and Andrew is down in Fleet in Hampshire. So without further ado, good morning to you, Andrew, sir.
Good morning, and thanks for having me on.
It is absolutely a pleasure, Andrew, and I've been really, really looking forward to having the chance to have the chat, because you are an intrepid explorer, I think, an adventurer too, and I think there's plenty of people out there who would love to be able to say they could do probably even half the things that you've done. Please, just tell us a little bit, if you would, Andrew, about your good self, your family, and you know, how it is you have come to be this such an intrepid traveller.
I'm 57 and getting old.
Okay.
I've got 4 kids. I feel ancient.
Wow.
I'd write this book starting at quite a young age and getting to 57. I don't even know how I've got here. And along the way, I even... the risks I've taken, I don't know why I'm here. I started doing this out of really a bit of a mistake. I mean, back in my early days, I think it started with an unfortunate thing, the death of my brother, who died of leukemia.
Right.
And sort of seeing him grow up and being, you know, a big part of his life. And really, it seemed such a waste. His life ended so young and didn't really get to do much or experience much. And I kind of always thought life was unfair, and I didn't want to follow that course. I didn't want to be the normal at that point. I wanted to see more than he was able to.
Yes.
So I think part of me has been living my life and his life together.
Right. Well, I mean, that's a nice way to pay tribute to him as well, isn't it?
I think so. And he's always been close to my heart and always close with me.
Yes.
I started just doing the general holidays, as you do with your family. Mm. Once every year you go away for 2 weeks. We weren't a very wealthy family, so it was only generally in the UK. But I never saw myself as this guy that would go to work, go to Spain for 2 weeks and come home. Life needed to be more than that, and by default it did change. I kind of wanted to find something different, and I'm very close to my cousin called Nigel, and he was already doing strange holidays, a little bit explory, and yeah, we decided to do something together. So we wanted to go to Afghanistan.
Right.
And at that time, it wasn't really the Taliban, but it was somewhere different. We wanted to get to Kabul, but unfortunately, they had an earthquake. So that cut that out. So we found a company called Explore, and they did trips to Uganda.
Right.
And it seemed a bit different. So I jumped on it. It was like a kind of a guerrilla animal trekking holiday, with a load of university graduates. Which I didn't kind of fit in with. But on that trip, some of the graduates went and spent time with these mountain gorillas. Lovely for them, but it bored the life out of me. So I went in illegally into Zaire, which is now the Congo Republic.
Right.
And whilst we're in there, we got chased out with a guy who thought we were stealing his bananas, because obviously it's a commodity to them.
Yes.
And he chased us and he would have killed us. And that adrenaline on that trip changed my life. And the book Trip Hazard will take you down that path.
So obviously that's pretty much story number one, I guess, in the book, is it?
It is. It's one. Well, story number, we started the book, myself and Richard. I wrote the book with Richard. He's a fantastic reporter, freelance reporter, fantastic. And he convinced me to write the book because I'm too blooming lazy. We started in Somalia. Because that, I think, changed my point of view of travel. I was quite privileged. I felt a bit of a, as it's been said, a kind of bit of a voyeurist of danger.
Mm.
And it didn't make me feel good. And then when I went to Somalia, I changed completely.
Right. So obviously, Somalia, for so many people, will be synonymous with the that story about Black Hawk Down, the helicopter crash and so on, the US. And as a country, as we said, it would probably have been one of the last places that people would have thought, you know, to even consider going to, let alone actually do it.
Yeah, it's funny. I was getting engaged to my wife when it happened. It's a strange
right,
thing.
Right, okay.
My cousin rang me up. I was in New York and I was about to propose. My cousin sent me a message and said, we can get into Mogadishu. So it's a strange thing. I was about to put the ring on my wife's finger and then it's Mogadishu, so I delayed it. That's the course we want to go. So conversation happened, came back, and I agreed to it. We agreed to go. It was a friend of mine could get us in.
Right.
And just before Christmas, I think 2 weeks before Christmas, I ended up in Mogadishu. It really is the most dangerous place on earth that I've still been to now. Mm. I mean, I've been everywhere, from Ukraine to Afghanistan to Iraq to being shot at and everything else. But this place is really, really scary.
Yeah, yes.
And I remember approaching the trip and watching the film Black Hawk Down. And I don't think it was the most advisable thing to do the day before you left.
Probably not.
I watched it with my wife.
Okay. Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Are you really going there? And I said, yeah. She's kind of used to my trips by now because this is kind of a long way in.
Yes, yes.
And as the book will tell you, when we got there, the first thing that we said was not really an airport lounge. It was a brick building. Mm. And all we could see from the brick building was a load of armored trucks and gunfire. We really were. And at that time, there's a terrorist organization called Shabab, and Shabab had a front line in Mogadishu.
Mm.
And at that time, I think all of my travels, any time I've been really scared, we were picked up by ex-special forces guy in the airport.
Yes.
And I can remember, we wanted to actually see the helicopter because we heard the Black Hawk was still there, the one you'd seen in the film that was shot down.
Right.
And we wanted to kind of a bit of brag, right, be the first tourist to find it. It's in a place called Bukhara Market, and notorious for Shabab, and still even today is run by Shabab.
Mm-hmm.
So we met our Croatian bodyguard, who took us to this kind of boardroom in this special location amongst a camp. It was like an IDP camp, and they're in an IDP camp, so obviously. If anyone was about, they'd be alerted. So we were taken to a boardroom, and on that boardroom we were told that we had a 50-50 chance of coming home alive.
Dear.
And the guy was serious.
Yeah, yes.
So getting there was probably a big thing. And then when I was sitting there, and I went to my bed with my bags, and after being told this, and you got that nervous thoughts that you're out the next day and you don't know if you've done the right thing, your thoughts go of your children, your selfishness. Mm. You thought, yeah, I've left all my kids at home and I'm going to die. Because 50-50 is not great odds, is it?
Not really. No, no. I mean, one immediate question for you. How do you get insurance for things like this then?
Oh, that's... You can't.
You can't. Well, that's fair enough. I mean, that's a straightforward answer.
Well, I did try. Now I'm sort of I got a press card and I do everything through media and television, so
yes,
I kind of, it's changed now, I'm more of a journalist.
Surely, yeah, yeah.
Free tourist. In those days I rang Tesco's because Tesco's did holiday insurance, and I just did a bit of a laugh and I rang them up and said I'm gonna book a holiday for Somalia. They said, oh yeah, no problem, that sounds nice. looked it up and they put the phone down on me.
Well, there you have it. Enough said, really.
It wasn't very nice to Tesco's, was it?
Well, no, but I mean, clearly they were trying to send you a subliminal message, I would suggest. And and then my second question has to be, your long-suffering wife, I mean, how does she let you get away with it?
Well, she did and she does, because, you know, I mean, there was one telling time when I come under attack in Kirkuk in Iraq. It was a frontline battle and I was editing the film when I got back. And as you do, it was an Easter, and she was looking over my shoulder, and she doesn't normally show interest in my travels, but this was really, really was a proper attack.
Yes.
And she never spoke to me for a couple of weeks.
Wow. I can't say necessarily I blame her, really. So, okay, well, let's leave that domestic dispute to one side then. So, fair enough. Obviously, a bit of an adrenaline junkie. Clearly, you were all making the right inquiries and finding the right people to help you get to the places you want to. But just how do you find those people?
Now it's easy.
Is it?
I've travelled so much because, well, now, I mean, after about 30 years of doing this, you've experienced, I keep fixers. I've got a little black book with all my fixers.
Got you.
Know them.
Right, right.
Everywhere I go, I know, like I'm off soon to do, I'm going to Ukraine to do the Zelensky interview. I'm taking a broadcaster over there.
Yes.
And I've got contacts. I've got security services that I know.
Right.
Security officers. So I have a book of fixers.
So that's how it's done, right? That little black book always comes in handy. So, yeah. So let's just talk. One of the places that I've always found fascinating, and it's on your list of places that you've been to, is North Korea. When did you get to go there?
Oh, they're nuts. That right. was about probably 7-8 years ago.
Right.
That trip was started pretty poorly. We went from Beijing on an airline flying into Pyongyang. Mm-hmm. It was a 1970s ex-Russian airplane.
Right.
Which almost fell apart. I mean, they're so frightened of the outside. I mean, we had our mobile phones taken off. As soon as you land in the airport,
yeah.
this guy comes around with a plastic Tupperware tray and mm-hmm. takes your mobile phone off you.
All right. Yeah, that's not a great start, is it? When you think, well, there's my one link with the outside world gone then.
Well, yeah, they did, but they weren't very good at it because I had an iPad. It was the early days of the iPad.
Right.
So I still, mind you can't get no emails or no reception out there anyway. But I managed, because you get chaperoned everywhere. You get
yes.
taken to an island.
Right.
The hotel's on an island. And I can tell you a story about it. There's about 20 floors on this one hotel that everybody goes to, and they've got a missing floor, which happens to be the 13th floor. So the lift goes up from 12, misses 13, goes straight to 14,
mm-hmm.
where your chaperones get off, and they've got a big security listening center.
Right.
And then if you search your rooms enough, you find the bugs, you know, kind of these 1970s, 80s kind of style bugs
yes.
in the lampshades.
Yes, yes. So North Korea, always, as I say, it always fascinated me. Yeah, fair enough. You've said you often have to have a chaperone to take you around. But what were the sort of places that you had on your hit list that you actually wanted to see when you were there then?
What, in North Korea?
Yeah. Yes.
We wanted to go to the DMZ, which is obviously the border between South and North.
Oh, yes, the demilitarized zone. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we went into there and into Pyongyang.
Right.
But funny enough, into Pyongyang, everybody thinks that the South Koreans aren't happy. We went into a wooded area, and we were shocked because they were barbecuing and having parties and dances.
Right, so you mean the North, you're saying the North Koreans, you thought, well, they
the
weren't
North
happy,
Korea, yeah,
happy.
They
yeah,
were, like,
yeah, but they were okay.
Yeah, apart from one place, we went to a fairground, which is strange. It was all set up for us. It was just outside Pyongyang, and the most scariest roller coaster I've been on, it was made of wood.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you wheels, the tracks used to part.
Right.
And you could have a cork gun and shoot American soldiers if you want to, obviously, because they're totally anti-American.
Yeah, no, understood.
And then, obviously, we went round where you can see Kim Il-sung laid to rest in his kind of plastic form, where you get paraded around his casket.
Right, right.
And they've got then the American, I think back in the 90s, they took hostage these American naval guys and got one of their boats.
Yes.
And they proudly take you to that boat and tell you how they held the whole of the American force back.
Ah, right. So
it's quite a propaganda trip.
Yeah, well, absolutely it would be. But I suppose that's the charm of it, if you would put it that way, really. Now, obviously, in your travels to some of these countries, you've clearly met some fascinating people. You've probably met some famous people. And you've mentioned that you're going to be going to the Ukraine again soon, and you're going to meet President Zelensky. But what about a couple of people then that are, shall we say, a little perhaps a bit more infamous, that you've crossed their paths?
Yeah. I've become, I got BAFTA nominated for her. So for Shamima Begum, I've spent the last year and a half visiting her in prison camp in Syria.
Right, right.
I think if anybody sees my name, they'll know me from it. I've done Piers Morgan and the likes, and most
yes,
TV
programs yes.
talking about her, because my stance has changed over the year, and she's become... Well, infamous, obviously, and she's got a trial at the moment where she's obviously trying to regain her citizenship.
Yes, yes.
So I would say she was, strange enough, she used to text me from the prison camp up until recently, until I wrote my last story about her.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say I know her probably better than anybody. I've met her 7-8 occasions in the last
year. Right,
right.
And I mean, it's a terribly complex case, and it would be a case, I'm sure, that polarizes a lot of people's opinions. But fascinating to think that you've been able to meet her so often and clearly built up some sort of a relationship with her, a rapport in the talks that you've had.
Yeah, I started feeling sorry for her when I first met her. I was filming a documentary that's out in cinema soon, and it's going to be on Disney Plus.
Right.
And it called Danger Zone. And on a day off, I knew she was in this camp called El Roge. And most journalists have been sent away from her, and I'm just a normal bloke, although I've done a few things. And she kind of liked that. And after spending a couple of hours with her on that one interview I did with her, she kind of saw something in me that wasn't with any other journalist. And I actually, at that point, quite liked her. I thought she may have been trafficked. She might have been radicalized. At that point, I did. I saw a kind of a waif sort of creature at the first visit. And I come back, and I got a daughter her age. I felt sorry for her.
Hmm.
Come back, and then I became probably infamous or famous because she actually gave me a hug. I went to shake her hand as I left. I said, because she's obviously a Muslim.
Yes.
And I said, can I shake your hand? And offered my hand. She said, can I have a hug? And started crying.
Mm.
And at that point, my heartstrings were a little bit gone. I probably was a little bit taken in by it.
Yes, yes.
But then at the beginning, that's where that ended. Then I took GMB and we did the BAFTA live interview that most people saw on TV or spoke about, seeing her have a live interview with Susanna Reid and Richard Madeley.
Right.
And then I took a couple of our other broadcasters. But by the end, the last trip I made, which was about 4 or 5 months ago, I saw the real Shamima.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm angry by the fact that she now says that she was trafficked. And that makes me angry because she wasn't trafficked. She went there on her own.
Right, right. Difficult, isn't it? When you know, obviously you're hearing people's stories and clearly so many other people have a counter view of things. And it's a very difficult path to tread, isn't it? Down the middle.
It is. I did try. But the thing is I've got no political or any bias against anything. I just say it as a normal bloke would do.
Yes.
I'm a builder by heart. I've got a building company now. I say it as anybody in the street would see it.
Mm,
When I first met her, I wanted to hate her. I wanted to dislike her. And then as time went on, I kind of went, I don't hate anybody, but it went down that line.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why it changed with Shamima. I go back to the death of my brother. She had 3 children die. She showed me photographs of 2 of them, and 1 of them obviously died quite early.
Mm.
And that's quite, for anyone, that's quite shocking.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I sent her a message from the camp, to the camp. I texted and I said, I was really sad to see the death of your children. And she said to me, it changed my opinion of her completely now. I'm over that now.
Mm.
And I don't see how you can ever be over.
No, that's a tricky one. Well, moving on from those conversations with her and that part of the world, again, so desperately mixed up. But clearly, as we said, you have an attraction to going to places that are really testing you. Now, so where would you say, perhaps just out of the ones that you have in your book, because obviously I can see that you have 10 sort of trips and travels, which one of those would you genuinely have said, this absolutely is probably the one where I could be meeting my maker?
In Kirkuk, Iraq.
Right.
It was ISIS were a strength. I based myself in Erbil, and we were visiting various front lines, which were quite inactive. There was nothing going on. We met the Peshmerga and the Kurds on 3 or 4 outside at Erbil. And there was nothing happening on this day. We got lost in Kirkuk, and it's not a place to get lost at
okay.
that time.
Yeah.
Because ISIS was still in strength. We pulled over and asked people, I mean, stupidly, where's the front line? I mean, it was sad, isn't it?
Right.
You pull over. But lucky enough, we found this TV company called Turkmen TV.
Yeah.
And there was a big battle on the outskirts of Kirkuk that night, and they were going to report on it. And so we asked if we could join them. which we tagged on with them, which made it easy to get through checkpoints because they thought we were just part of them.
Mm.
So at that time, there's a long road. I mean, front lines are very funny. You go from normality to semi-normality, then silence. And it was silent when we got there. I was talking to most of the soldiers around there, and they said what happened. They'd had a chemical attack. They were the Abbas militia fighting ISIS. They were held a front line to their hometown, which was about 1,500 meters from our
point. Right, yeah.
You could see the houses. You could see visually from your own eyes ISIS, black flags and people in and out houses. And there was a vehicle in no man's land that had explosives. And ISIS, the Abbas militia were concerned that ISIS was going to come at night, get back in this vehicle, and then drive it towards them and detonate.
Right.
So they wanted to detonate it for.
Yes.
And unfortunately, ISIS saw them try to detonate this car, and that started a massive battle. And at that point, bullets were flying everywhere. And
right.
I was
and you thought,
of it.
This could be tricky. This could be very tricky. Now,
not at the time.
Right.
It was only when I went home. But there's a story that's important to tell, and there's people with the importance. I sat in a sniper pit with a good guy.
Mm.
He was looking through his sniper rifle day after day, and he told the story to me that his sniper rifle was pointed at his house that he once lived in.
Yeah.
His wife and children were spending every day with ISIS, and he had the torture of looking through that sniper scope.
Well, Andrew, listen, our time is running out, as I knew it was going to. Where do people go to find out a little bit more about your adventures and of your travels? You obviously must have websites and so on.
You can look for me on Twitter, obviously.
Yeah.
You can buy the book.
Of course.
Trip Hazard from Candy Jar. I've got it up for sale now. It's in Waterstones and all other good bookshops.
Surely, yes.
And I think you've actually got early release in Wales. You can find me on Netflix.
Indeed, right.
I'm on a series called Dark Tourist. You can find me on episode 4.
Right.
And
right.
Look out for me on a film that's out any week now.
Wow.
Called Danger Zone. You'll be able to get hold of that on Disney Plus very soon.
Andrew, it's been great fun talking to you, and obviously some really interesting and moving stories. And I think clearly we'll have to have you back on in the future to talk about some of the other places, because clearly we've hardly touched some of them. But thank you so much for being with me today on the phone. And obviously, best of luck with the book Trip Hazard from Candy Jar, which is officially published on the 19th of January. But let's talk again soon.
Thank you very much. Go speak soon.
Thank you so much. Great stuff.
Bye.
Thank you.